Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Kinnairy. For the rest of the hour today, we're zooming way out from southwest Florida and focusing in on North Korea. We're doing that because next Tuesday, April 2nd, my guest, Dr. Bruce Bennett, will be presenting a seminar called Understanding North Korea in Naples. It's the first of what are called Imagine Solutions Seminars that extend the annual Imagine Solutions Conference that happened last month. Dr. Bennett is a senior international defense researcher at the RAND Corporation. It's a nonprofit global policy think tank. He works primarily on research topics like strategy, force planning, and counterproliferation. He's an expert in Northeast Asian military issues, having visited the region more than 100 times, and he's written much about Korean security issues. So we thought we'd pick his brain about what's happening in this reclusive country that seems to do a pretty good job of keeping everyone guessing. Dr. Bennett, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Thanks for your time.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
And if you would like to add your voice to our conversation, give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. You can engage with us on Facebook or Twitter. We're at WGCU Public Media. So when did you start on the path toward becoming an expert on Northeast Asian military issues?
It was really mid-career. I was roughly 1989 or 1990. Mid-career, working for the director of net assessment in the Pentagon, working on modeling warfare in Europe. And he came to me and said, the Secretary of Defense now wants a military balance study on Korea. I want you to do the analysis. Hmm. So I started on Korea.
Hmm. How many times have you traveled to North Korea?
Oh, I think I'm at 119 right now.
Wow. Yeah, it said Korean Peninsula, so I thought maybe that was including South Korea. But you've been to North Korea that many times?
Oh, I'm sorry, not North Korea.
Okay, no, yeah.
Just to South Korea. No, the only times I've been in North Korean territory is when I've been under the demilitarized zone in their tunnels.
Gotcha. Okay. What does it take to go to North Korea? Because I know some people get to go there, right? Is that something that you could do if you decided to?
Well, possibly, but right now the State Department has a no-go for American citizens simply because of the risks. You'll remember Otto Warmbier, mm-hmm. who came back and was killed basically by the North Koreans. The State Department doesn't want to repeat that situation.
Understood. Is North Korea a complete and total outlier when it comes to nations around the world, or is there anything even remotely similar to what it is?
Well, it is an outlier in most regards. There are some aspects which are similar to other countries. I mean, interest in nuclear weapons, pursuit of military forces, suppression of human rights. We see that in a number of other countries. So it certainly is an outlier in magnitude, but not necessarily in the characteristic of a very repressive regime.
Gotcha. And it does not – I didn't realize this, and I'm not a North Korean expert, but it does not consider itself to be a communist nation anymore. Is that correct? And can you explain why or what?
Sure. It considers itself to be a socialist country. But even then, from the period of 1995 to 1998, North Korea experienced a famine, largely weather-induced, but also induced by the loss of Soviet support that caused the death by starvation of somewhere between 1 and 3 million people out of a 20 million population. Literally, people were starving. The regime had money to buy food and bring it in, but they were focused on other things and just let people starve. As a result, people started working in markets. They started doing business, which good socialists are not supposed to do. And they've developed now a very capitalist economy in many regards. That's dangerous because capitalism's against the law. If you get caught and you can't bribe the officials, you're likely going to be in prison or dead. So it's dangerous, but doable.
Do the people in North Korea, the average everyday people, know how different life is there as compared to, the West?
Well, historically, they did not. So, again, you go back to the 1990s or whatever, their access to outside information was very little, and their internal propaganda told them that they were in the nirvana of worlds, and if they went to South Korea, they'd be starving and far worse off. Now, the interesting phenomenon is North Koreans love more than any other form of media South Korean soap operas, because those soap operas show what life is like on the outside world. And they realize that the outside is much better off in many regards, though some people still are skeptical that this is just, you know, TV and not reality.
How do they get access to the soap operas? Is that something that they can, you know, legally get access to, or is it more of a bootleg situation?
Oh, it's certainly not legal. If you are caught with one of the soap operas, you will serve somewhere between 1 and 10 years in hard labor.
Wow.
And there will be no court session. You will be arrested and sent to prison. That's the nature of their system. The way it comes in usually used to come in largely on DVDs, but they were big and easy for the security services to spot. Now they tend to come in mainly on USB drives, the small drives, and they get smuggled in, they get sold. And a lot of the people who get them are from the elite class, because they're in a position to bribe the officials if they get caught.
You know, with storage getting so good, you know, you can put like a terabyte of data now on these little tiny little, you know, SD cards or whatever. It yep. seems like, you know, is that the best way that country's going to change, is just by flooding it with that outside world information that makes people realize there's another world out there?
Well, that's a part of it, but it's got to go beyond that. There's got to be other kinds of information that get in. I mean, for example, many of us look at the Hanoi summit that just occurred between President Trump and Chairman Kim and consider it a failure and consider it a disaster. The reality is, because there was no agreement, but Kim had told his people that he was coming back with a supreme victory over President Trump, that was what was going to happen, and he came back without it. This is a major problem for the North Korean government right now. They've lost credibility. Kim is supposed to be the god of North Korea, and he didn't look very much like a god given the results.
And so they didn't just try to lie and say that they got something they didn't. They had to, the people know that it didn't work out the way he predicted it would.
Well, initially they did try to lie. Initially they did try to make it look good. But enough outside information leaks in that eventually they had to say, well, there was really no agreement, but boy, didn't we look magnificent right up against the American president. Kim is a peer of the American president. He's just at the same level. So they tried to dress it up a little bit, but people know that it didn't work out so well.
I'm talking with Dr. Bruce Bennett during this part of today's show. He's a senior international defense researcher on North Korea with the RAND Corporation. He'll be in town on April 2nd for an Imagine Solutions seminar in Naples. If you'd like to ask him a question about North Korea, now's the time. Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So in researching for this conversation, I was surprised to read, and correct me if this is not correct, that North Korea is the country with the highest number of military and paramilitary personnel, with over 9.5 million active reserve and paramilitary personnel. Is that accurate? They have the biggest sort of military, if you include all the edges?
Yeah, if you include all of the reserves who are actually serving reserve service. I mean, if you're in South Korea, they've got a large number. They've almost 3 million reserves. But they serve 3 days a year on active duty. In North Korea, you have 7.5 million reserves, and they serve about the same as American Army Reserve personnel do. So about a month or so of reserve duty, 2 weeks during the summer and regular weekends during the rest of the year.
And that's like 9.5 million people.
So you've got about 7.5 million reserves, you've got 1.5 million active duty, and you've got another 500,000 or so that are your security services, the Secret Service of North Korea, and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, you think out of a 25 million population, 40% of the population is under arms.
Hmm. How do we know what we know or what we think we know about the military in North Korea? Like, what are our, you know, how do, what is the source of that information?
Well, of course, there are defectors from North Korea, and you get some information from them. Some of them are relatively senior. I've talked to individuals as senior as having been a colonel in North Korea. You also get information from South Korea. South Korea has extensive intelligence coverage. They listen to broadcasts. They have spies and so forth. And they produce a white paper, the South Korean Defense Ministry does each year, which describes in a fair amount of detail at an aggregate level the size of the North Korean forces. For example, Kim Il-sung, the founder of North Korea, was, in his mind, special forces. He led a group that fought against the Japanese. And so the North Korean, that special forces is a heritage. The North Koreans have 200,000 individuals they consider to be special forces.
Hmm. You know, we hear a lot, you know, in the news about, you know, their aspirations, or I guess, you know, their aspirations now to expand their nuclear weapons capability. How certain are we about that whole system and, you know, what we think we know?
Well, we're not very certain about a lot of it. There's a lot of uncertainties. But you'll remember, if you heard the news conference after the Hanoi summit, President Trump said that in negotiating with Kim Jong-un, Kim offered to dismantle the Yongbyon facility. And President Trump said, reportedly, according to media stories, well, okay, that means that includes the Bungang facility, which is 3 kilometers from Yongbyon. And Kim looked at him and said, you know about that?
Hmm.
And it's significant. The uranium enrichment facility in Yongbyon is supposed to have 4,000 centrifuges. The one at Bungang has reportedly got 10,000 centrifuges. So a huge facility right adjoining. And Kim's comment was, no, that's not included.
Hmm. How do they pay for all this? What is their economy based on?
Their economy is not in very good shape. Their GDP, depending upon which source you believe, GDP per capita is somewhere between about $800 and $1,500 a year. So less than a tenth of the South Korean GDP. So a lot of agriculture. Some manufacturing, the capitalists have gotten things going there in North Korea. You'll have a lot of raw materials. They have an incredible source of iron, coal, and other raw materials, including rare earths, where China is one of the only countries that puts out many rare earths now. North Korea may well be competitive. It's reported that they may have $6 to $8 trillion of raw materials.
Hmm. You know, President Trump seems to be taking in at least one tack that he's on, almost like a real estate developer's approach, saying that there's so much potential for growth. And now you're saying these natural resources. Is that true? I mean, is there a lot of room for growth in North Korea?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, to extract those things takes a lot of money. North Korea doesn't have the capital, and so they haven't set it up. You know, their GDP is only about $30 billion compared to this $6 or $8 trillion. So could they expand significantly? Yeah, but they'd need the capital to set up the mining to do that kind of thing. They've allowed some Chinese companies in to do that. But generally speaking, the North Korean business world is so corrupt, government officials and so forth, that oftentimes it hasn't been profitable for the Chinese companies, even though it should be.
Hmm. You know, their leader, Kim Jong-un, is in his 30s, right? He's younger. And from what I understand, he has, you know, he probably likes the South Korean soap operas as well. Can you imagine him, you know, really taking drastic steps to change what's going on there in a way that his father and grandfather would not have?
No, he bases a lot of his legitimacy upon his father and grandfather. That's one of the reasons why it's hard to believe he will ever give up his nuclear weapons, since those are legacies of his father and grandfather. So that kind of change is going to be very hard to do. Nevertheless, he's allowed capitalism to get a pretty strong hold on the country. So he's made some compromises, but he's argued that he can't really go too far too fast on the denuclearization process because he'd face hardliners who would give him serious difficulty. Okay. I mean, he either is in control of North Korea or he's not. Is he really not that in control of the country? We don't know.
As someone who works, you know, whose work, that is, applies to war game or that applies war gaming, risk management, deterrence-based strategy, I'm reading this off your bio, competitive strategies, military simulation and analysis, how concerned are you about the possibility of North Korea using a nuclear weapon unexpectedly, say?
So the problem there probably comes more out of the kinds of provocations that we've been seeing in the past. You know, North Korea has shelled a South Korean island. They've sunk South Korean warship. They've had many naval attacks, but these have all been limited attacks. Sometime, though, in that process, the South Koreans have gotten increasingly aggressive towards North Korea and said, if you do that, we are really going to whack you back. Now, the South Koreans have said that to deter North Korea, and that's been pretty effective. But at some point, North Korea may still decide to do a provocation. The South Koreans may hit them back hard, and the North Koreans, in order not to lose face, could escalate and go to a higher level of warfare, potentially eventually to full warfare. The thing which scares me is North Korea today may well have 30 to 70 or so nuclear weapons. And they have a philosophy which says, if we kill 20,000 or so Americans at the very beginning of a war, the Americans are going to withdraw. They no longer have the stomach for major attrition warfare. And they could put a few nuclear weapons down on U.S. military bases at the start of a major conflict and cause that much attrition. But I think they're wrong. I think that if they do that, that's like Pearl Harbor. The U.S. is going to respond very, very strongly.
How much do we know about North Korea's efforts to use cyber warfare? I know their names come up more than once over the past 5 years or so when it comes to some of these big cases.
Oh, absolutely. They're heavily involved in cyber warfare. This is one of the major ways. You know, the regime is impoverished. And one of the ways you deal with things when you need money for things like nuclear weapons is you even use your embassies and every means possible to make money. So they put programmers into foreign companies, like in China historically, have them work for foreign companies so that they make money, but also then in their off hours, they have them hack. And when they're hacking, they're trying to make more money. So they've stolen tens of millions of dollars from overseas banks that weren't very well protected, sent that back to the regime. This is a major kind of activity. They've also been very disruptive, a disruption of service kind of attacks against South Korean companies.
Besides conflict, would it be fair to say that the next most dangerous thing about North Korea is its economic weakness? Because if it collapses, there would just be a real disaster in terms of refugees and support necessary?
Oh, absolutely. One of the problems you face during that famine in the 90s, there was a major flow of people into China. We don't know exactly how many, but at least tens of thousands, if not hundreds. China doesn't want that. China's very concerned that there's a large Korean ethnic minority in China. If those people float into China, ironically, the northeast of China, the Manchuria area that we historically talked about, is the poorest part of China. And if you get a major flow of North Korean refugees into China, there's not a lot of ability to economically absorb those people. And that would cause serious difficulty for China. So the leader of China, Xi Jinping, has said, that he will not allow war or chaos to develop on the peninsula. He's going to stop that.
There's a tangled knot over there, huh?
It is.
We're basically out of time, but I just want to ask one last question. You know, nobody can see over the horizon, obviously, but from where you stand with your research and sort of understanding of things, what do you think is going to happen next with, you know, these efforts at negotiation between the United States and North Korea?
Well, interestingly, in his New Year's address, Kim Jong-un said that he would no longer produce nuclear weapons. So I am hoping that President Trump says, well, Chairman Kim, you've been asking for corresponding measures. I have all these things I want to do for you. But to do that, I have to verify that you have stopped production. So I want you to invite in inspection teams to verify that you are no longer producing weapons. And then, hey, here are all the things that we're going to do to support you. That would be an excellent first step. Whether Kim will accept that or not is an interesting question.
One you'll be following closely, I'm sure. That is all the time we have for today's show. Thanks to my guest, Dr. Bruce Bennett is the RAND Corporation's Senior International Defense Researcher on North Korea. He'll be in Naples on Tuesday, April 2nd for an Imagine Solutions seminar at the GNL Theater on the campus of the Community School of Naples. Dr. Bennett, thank you so much for your time and insights. I've enjoyed our chat.
Thank you.
And you can find a link to more information about his seminar titled Understanding North Korea on our website, gulfcoastlive.org. And thank you to my earlier guest, Ed Carlson, Director Emeritus of the Audubon Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary. If you missed any of today's show and want to catch up, you can always hear full episodes on our website, or you can subscribe to our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by Rachel Iacovone and myself. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thank you for listening. I'm Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.